Test. 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 Testing. Test.
Check this out.
Ranger.
Autonomous Action Radio, a multimedia radio show, a website, an idea, a suggestion, an action plan. Because it's up to us now.
This communique will most likely be marked and destroyed shortly after it is discovered. Listen on at your own risk. The urban industrialized society that you live within is systematically destroying the environment. The Mechanopolis is destroying the planet. You have been psychologically programmed to believe that this is not happening. Pockets of resistance have been weeded out and crushed.
Rise up in the morning, there's work to be done. With a horse and a pistol, great fortunes are won. They say there's men digging up gold every day. Come ride with me, see if your shirt comes out gay. Wash away all the sins from my body, unclean. Wash away all the pain, these blue eyes have seen. Wash away all the sorrow we've put our hearts through. Wash away in the river, lads, wash away and I do. To the church every Sunday you sit and despise. Cares not for our lives. He forces us to take arms to keep our kids fed. He says for our crimes we'll see hell when we're dead.
Wash away all the sins from my body, unclean. Wash away all the pain these blue eyes have seen. Wash away all the sorrow we put our hearts through. Wash away in the river lands. Wash away and make do.
Today with Peter and Kimbo.
Hi.
Annika's in the house and we're going to be talking a little bit about a rally we went to yesterday, which is called the, I don't want to actually say the name because it's a bit too nationalistic. It changed from being March and then it's gone to March Australia, and it's just a little, I don't really want to say March in Australia, so I went to the March for a Better Government. Because it's a March for a Better Government, rather than saying a March for Australia, because that kind of leaves up the pain and suffering from Indigenous people that they've experienced through the years. From the invasion of Australia, Tony Abbott says nothing of significance happened in Australia until 1788, but there was a hell of a lot going on before 1788 as well. First of all, on today's show, I'm going to play something from Boots Riley. He's in the coup, and he was invited onto a Fox radio show, and the Fox announcer had no idea what his band was about, and it was to promote a festival that was coming up. And last week, our radiothon was Challenge Your Media Diet. This one isn't really challenging the media diet, but it's challenging the media, because he came out with this.
Yeah. Well, Boots, tell us a little bit about your band and the lineup that people are going to hear today.
Well, we're a punk, funk, / communist revolution band.
Okay.
And we are from Oakland, California. And we make everybody dance while telling them about how we need to get rid of this system. Mm-hmm. How exploitation is the primary contradiction in capitalism. Mm-hmm. And that if we want to express our power, we're going to have to be more radical in our actions. We're going to have to be able to withhold our labor collectively to be able to demand and affect the changes that we need to make.
Okay, so but people are going to hear from a whole lineup of bands today?
Oh, yeah. Not just us.
Yeah.
And after that, she's like, well, moving on. And then the person who was promoting the festival got this angry email about, why did you let this person go on to our show, blah, 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 because it doesn't really fit the Fox News agenda. Fox is part of News Limited, yes, in America. And they're very well known for their sort of right-wing views and pushing the agenda. It's 10 minutes past 12. As I said, we went to the march yesterday. I've called it the March for March, because it's marching without maybe a real agenda behind that, or public meetings to build a movement. Yes. Peter?
Well, yes, there was. I mean, obviously, the numbers were down too. That was mentioned in the mainstream media significantly, because the first one was quite big, and then the second one in May was a bit smaller. And that one, it's easy to categorise it as just, you know, sort of Labour sympathisers, a lot of them, you know. So it's just the alternative government, you know. So, yeah, I didn't even stay for the march. Linda, you didn't notice that I left.
No, I did notice you'd gone. I thought, Peter's gone off to the 4ZZZ bowling.
He's very keen. No, I was a bit handicapped about that. So, no, I didn't go. Yeah, they had a big billboard, didn't they?
That's right.
Huge billboard. I wonder how much that cost.
Yeah, it's from the Union Slush Fund, obviously.
Oh, well, there you go.
That was the Electrical Trades Union is mainly doing the not-for-sale assets.
Yeah, but I do remember the second one. There was a guy who was talking to that point that you were just making about a movement, about alternative ways of, you know, running the country. Some actually union guy, I remember that. But, yeah, I didn't hear any stuff like that for the brief time that I was there at the thing.
Yes. And Sam Watson did do a welcome to country.
Mm-hmm.
However, it would have been good to have a bit more.
Yes, it was.
About.
If we're going on about significant days in our history, I would like to propose Invasion Day in 1988 in Sydney. That, for me, was a real, you know, significant day, because it was probably one of the largest gatherings of Aboriginal Islander and their supporters in the country, in the history, and, you know, and it was really, really powerful.
There's currently a walk happening from, I think it's happening from, it's a women, Aboriginal women's walk. Mm. I'll play the spot now, so we can find out about it. And then we're going to hear from John Quiggin, who is an economist who spoke at the rally. And also a comedian, Mandy Nolan, coming up later on the show as well. I'm going to be playing part 4 of the Guy McPherson talk about climate change and human extinction. Radiothon's over, so we can go back to being depressing again.
But you still got to pay your money, people.
That's right.
I'm going to pay mine right now.
Woohoo!
1788 down Sydney Cove, first boat people land, and they say, sorry, boys, our gain's your loss. Where can the steal your land?
First Nations women are walking from Melbourne to Canberra, starting in Melbourne on the 1st of September. With an early morning breakfast send-off, we invite everybody to join the women as they embark on a six-week journey. It's time to make a stand for our children, lands and waterways. Join us as instruments for justice. We are doing this because the sisters, aunties, mothers and grandmothers have been witness long enough to the pain and suffering, hopelessness and despair of our people and homelands through the systematic genocide of our people by forcing conditions of life upon them, resulting in the physical, mental, emotional and spiritual harm of a group of people. If you or your group, business, would like to come on board and join the walk or support us in any way, please feel free to contact us and see how you can get involved. We look forward to walking the talk together. Keep tuned for more updates. We will keep people posted through our media networks as to where we will be so that others may join us along the way. Contact Susan Rankin by email on First Nations Ceremonial Walk 2014@hotmail.com or by phoning her on 0422 445 565.
With the chain on your neck and hands, and they taught us, whoa, black woman, that shall not steal.
So that march was heading, that walk was heading off today from Cockburn in Melbourne. I'm going to hear now from economist John Quiggin, who started off by saying that many economists are now admitting that they got it wrong about capitalism and the trickle-down effect.
Increasing numbers of economists, most notably Paul Krugman in the New York Times, but even spreading to the central bankers, accepting that the policies of austerity that we've that have been pursued, particularly in Europe, to a lesser extent in the UK, USA, Australia, since the global financial crisis, have been a failure, that the attempt to bail out the banks, keep the system working exactly as it has, put all the burden onto working people, has not delivered the goods. So that message is finally, I think, getting through the economics profession. Not, of course, to the LNP here in Australia, or indeed to much of our policy elite, which is still living back in that 1980s era. The other big message has been a rejection of what we call trickle down, the idea that if we only let the wealthy have their head, they will generate enough wealth for themselves and some more will flow down to everybody else. That idea, of course, put slightly more elegantly than that, has been central to the so-called reforms of the past 30 years, the things that have seen the financial sector grow from a relatively small part of the economy to a gigantic and incredibly wealthy one, that have seen the rise of the so-called 1% people, you know, a group gaining an ever larger share of our income. What we're seeing is that far from energising and dynamising the economy, these people are now becoming an inherited elite. We look at names like Gina Rinehart, James Packer. These people aren't rich because they were the smartest people in their age group. They're rich because they had the right parents. And that is going to be the way in which the future evolves under the kinds of policies that have dominated for the last 30 years. That's been increasingly recognised. If you haven't read it, I recommend you read Thomas Piketty's book Capital. Despite the title and the thickness, it's actually an incredibly readable book, and it really lays out how we're going back to the kind of 19th century economy where the way to get rich was either to inherit money or to marry it. And that's the kind of failure we're seeing. Looking at the LNP government at state and federal level, we don't even see a coherent plan to advance neoliberalism anymore. It's just a bunch of reflexes, a grab bag of culture war things. They don't like a bunch of people, as Larissa Waters just said, so they take money off them. They say, they justify that by saying we have a budget emergency, but then they remember all their friends who have to be handed money, so they for example, restore concessions on luxury cars under FBT. They don't touch at all the massive rorts under the superannuation system. Everything is taken from the people they don't like. And it's exactly the same here at the state level. All we're seeing is they just judge politics entirely in terms of this culture war framework. People like us here are the people they want to hit. People like themselves are they want to help. And that's why, for example, the governor of the Reserve Bank said the latest budget, the Abbott government's budget, wasn't particularly draconian. In terms of fixing the overall balance of the budget, it wasn't. Most of the cuts they made were wasted given away to their own supporters, so the net impact was almost zero. And so I think we're seeing this. We're seeing again, of course, the tired old idea of asset sales as a way of fixing the budget, something that's been tried and failed in every country in the Western world for the past 20 or 30 years. Tried, unfortunately, by the last government here in Queensland. If selling assets was going to fix the budget, why did they claim to find a financial disaster immediately they came into office? Of course, there was no disaster. This is just part of the same tired script that every LNP government since at least 1989, I've been doing this since 1989, refusing these damn reports, and you know, it really is just like the various rituals when they open Parliament House. They commission a commission of audit, they discover a budget emergency, and they use it to do the same things they were planning on doing anyway. Look, I know we're short of time, so I just want to reassure you, we're not fighting against the inexorable logic of economics. The economists who pushed these ideas have been discredited or have changed their minds. We're really looking at governments at both the state and federal level that are living with the failed ideas of last century, the failed politics of things like the 49% in the US, go hockey lifters and leaners. We can beat these people, and we should. Thank you.
You just heard from John Quiggin, who spoke yesterday at the March for a Better Government, which was held in King George Square, and we went for a march after some speakers, and it was pretty like a good march, probably over 500 people, I guess, but it was a little lackluster, not reaching the kind of emotional heights that the marches for Gaza have reached. It was kind of a bit like a bit of a stroll in the street, and Kimbo and I were talking about how it was our free speech zone, because it was a sanctioned march. It wasn't a march that was spontaneous. It was pre-prepared and it was sanctioned. There was a permit for it, so we were just kind of in a moving free speech zone around the streets with the police helping us around it.
Nice of them to help.
Yes.
I saw a sign that said, right, right or left, we think the government is wrong. Which kind of summed it up, really.
Yes, there's a quote by Chris Crass or someone, and it says, the state remains the same. It doesn't matter who you vote for. The structure still remains. The state remains the same.
Yeah, and it's real easy to march for a really broad issue like we're against the government or reconciliation or, you know, something like that, where you do get the numbers, whereas if it's for a specific thing that happened that you disagree with, you often get less numbers.
So now we're going to hear a song by...
Oh, but this is Penelope's song, Trickle Down. This goes with the economist talk you just heard. Straight.
And you just heard from Penelope Swales and Trickle Down, and that refers to the capitalism that wealth will trickle down from the rich to the poor, or from the ruling class to the working class. Yesterday at the march in for a better government, also there was a comedian, Mandy Nolan, and she was quite good, and it was good to have some comic relief. So we're going to hear from her now. You're on 4ZZZ, The Anarchy Show, 102.1 FM. Thanks to everyone for supporting a very successful radiothon.
Oh my God, that's the most terrifying place to walk when you're a 90 kilo woman. I tell you what, you need a good healthcare system when you're a 90 kilo woman standing on a milk crate. I can't wait 10 years in a line to get a new knee. That's where we will be. It's going to take this up a bit more because I am one big woman. Might join a group called Big White Middle Class Women Against Abbott. That's right. I suppose too, I'd like to start by having to acknowledge Abbott and Newman's newly appointed traditional owners, the Coal Seam Gas Company. Clearly there's been some choices made there. But today, I wanted to gather together to acknowledge the death of a great Australian, a fair go. Yeah. Killed by Tony Abbott with the blunt end of his hockey stick. There are a few Australians out there, people, not touched by a fair go, and I don't mean an in sort of George Pell's kind of truck company way. Few who haven't benefited from his deeply egalitarian values, his belief in a level playing field for all, for championing the underdog, diminishing the divide between the elite and the vulnerable, so that we as Australians can stand toe to toe, shoulder to shoulder, head to head, even when we don't have a toe, a shoulder, or a head. A fair go underpins our sense of being Australian. It defined who we were in the world, that we are a nation built on the back of suffering, of Indigenous peoples, of convicts, of migrants, all of whom have pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, even when they didn't even have shoes. A fair go was visionary. It believed in providing a top-notch healthcare for everyone from idiots like James Packer to a supermarket shelf packer. Yeah. A fair go believed the Australian worker has a right to a fair pay for a fair day's work. A fair go rallied hard against the destruction of a unionised workforce and the introduction of a chicken box blanket of employment initiatives like Work Choices. A fair go knew that when corporations get to choose between people and profits, that people rarely win. I mean, you can't buy property with people, but hey, you can take property off people. We've noticed that. A fair go believed that all children in Australia have a right to free education, and that is education. Yes, as diverse as a rainforest, not the monopolised, privatised Christopher Pine plantation that education is being morphed into. I must personally thank a fair go. I was the child of a single parent. A fair go sent me to university, paid for my rent, paid for my books, my food, and occasionally my booze. Thanks to a fair go, I was able to leave university and become a successfully government-funded career as one of the long-term unemployed. Yes, and unlike Clive Palmer, I did not get off the couch and become a mining magnate. Instead of coal, I chose comedy, something probably not as lucrative, but a lot more sustainable in an environment where you have a Liberal government. There's a lot of jokes on the table for me at the moment. A fair go allowed me to be the time to be a confused, lazy adolescent, an aberrant 20-something, so I could grow into a fully rounded, pain-in-the-ass, money-earning taxpayer who was happy to give back so that a fair go could get other people on their feet. Yeah. A fair go represented the kind of country that I wanted to live in, where my privilege is not built on the suffering and discomfort of my fellow Australians. Which is something we all feel. A Fair Go does not lock children in detention or incarcerate asylum seekers. A Fair Go does not assume that only the rich have cars. And by the way, welcome to those of you who walked here today. I had to start on Wednesday because I live in Mullumbimby.
You said you'd meet me at the corner of Russell and Victoria. When I arrived, you weren't there. So I opened up the bottle of red I bought to share and sat upon the monument stairs.
It says here,
my battle's fought and won.
It says
a victory's
here,
long time coming. An 8-hour day, an honest working wage. It's just history sitting on the steps of the 8-hour monument, drinking my day away. Sitting on the steps of the 8-hour monument, thinking what would the ghosts of a great grandparent say. Across the road, trades hall, and behind me the old Melbourne jail. I bought a souvenir mug to drink out of with the death mask of Edward Kelly.
It says here,
Ned's parting word.
It says here,
such is life. Where in heavens are you? What the hell am I to do? And how on earth did it end up this way?
It's just history.
Sitting on the steps of the 8-hour monument, drinking my day away. Sitting on the steps of the 8-hour monument, thinking what would they say? Sitting on the steps of the 8-hour monument, drinking my day away. Sitting on the steps of the 8-hour monument, thinking what would the ghosts of a great grandparent say?
And you just heard from The Currency, a band from Melbourne, and 8-8. I'm excited to have company in the studio today. I've also got company on the phone. Duncan from the National Union of Students has joined us. I'm pretty good. How are you?
Not too bad.
Things are starting to liven up in Brisbane, it seems.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so.
And there's a rally next week against Christopher Pyne. Who's Christopher Pyne?
Well, for those of you who are listening, he's the education minister of this disgusting Liberal Abbott government.
And what's he doing? Why is there going to be this protest against him?
Sure. Well, basically, first of all, I suppose it's important to say that he's been invited onto the campus by the UQ, the University of Queensland administration. And the reason, yeah, we think is worth protesting against is because under the recent Abbott government, they're trying to actually introduce a few things which are going to totally, I think, trash public education as we know it. So basically, they want to introduce deregulated university fees, which will make the Australian education system very similar to the United States in terms of, like, potentially like $100,000 degrees. you know, degrees that are entirely about how much students can basically be squeezed to pay, rather than anything about, like, you know, accessibility or anything like that. And the other things, like including a funding cut across the board for all universities, and also an increase to the interest rate for your loan, which means that if you don't pay up front, if you're not like the wealthy minority that does that, then you're going to be hit with an even bigger debt over the course of, you know, potentially decades, which is what the modelling is saying, that students will be paying paying back their student debt.
So the university administration have invited him, and I guess there's a bit of a divide between the university administration and even the university staff and students, because the administration and the chancellor of UQ get some ludicrous amount of money.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's gone down a bit after that corruption scandal a few years ago, but it's still hovering in the high hundreds of thousands of dollars, nearly $1 million a year. But I think that that payment reflects the fact that the administration of the university wants to run the university like a business, and they don't seem to see that there's a problem with a deregulated university fee structure, because they know it'll be a cast and answer for them. It's actually been just released recently, statistics that were leaked to the Fairfax Press saying that on average, in the group of eight universities, of which the University of Queensland is one, they stand to gain, on average, $300 million extra a year in student fees, and that's including in their modelling, which is a really shameful thing, a 20% drop in student numbers. So I think that speaks for itself as to why the university administration are trying to actually welcome this scumbag onto campus, despite his obvious plans to, yeah, really Americanize the education system.
I mentioned the National Tertiary Education
Union. Yeah.
Union.
So, yeah, the staff members have, in many instances, of course, also appalled by these plans. You know, plenty of staff do not want to be, I guess, production line workers for pumping out research and, journal articles for the university, but actually want to be teaching students, you know, engage in that process of the way the universities often pitch themselves, which is that they should be places of learning, you know, academic integrity and achievement. But and they can see that actually having a system of fees where, you know, your access to education is determined by your income is not, you know, equitable and not actually not just. So there's been support for this sort of protest and generally the education campaign by the staff union, which is the National Tertiary Education Union.
So the protest is happening at what time?
So everyone, I encourage people to come along. Like I said, it's for everyone to come. If you're against what the government's doing to higher education, but obviously if you're a student, I think everyone needs to come out there and actually make sure that Chris Pine does get the reception he deserves, which I think is protest. So that's going to be at 5 o'clock on September the 10th. And we're meeting at the front of the UQ Union complex at the University of Queensland. And we're going to bring along, like, you know, some, I guess, like, you know, funny little signs and things like that. Like, for instance, we're going to make a gigantic Pinadol box. You know, the cure is, have you got pinositis? Have you got pine flu? The cure, Pinadol. Yeah, just to make it, you know, hopefully a bit of a lively and, you know, enjoyable protest for everyone. But, and most importantly, getting across that point about exactly what it is that Chris Pine is doing to education.
And in Adelaide a few weeks ago, there was a great protest where Tony Abbott was given a great reception to
Absolutely.
Adelaide, and there were police horses brought out and people injured. And also yesterday, on the weekend, there was the welcome for the World Congress of Families down in Victoria.
It's been quite good to see those sort of actions happening, and I think it really has been, I guess, helping to re-legitimise protest in the minds of, you know, a lot of people in Australia. And I think the most important thing about it is that, you know, this has been successful. Like, yeah, the protest against Tony Abbott, like those, you know, something like 500 students or even more came out at very short notice to, yeah, protest against him. And that sort of action, I think, is really important to maintain the pressure on the politicians around their their horrible federal budget, which, you know, isn't just attacking students, but generally is an attack on working class people in this country. And, yeah, you know, we've seen the results in terms of Pine's popularity. He's so unpopular, actually, that, you know, there's been some survey done that if an election was held today, he would lose his safe Liberal seat in Adelaide. So, you know, I think that's a pretty good outcome. But we just need to keep up that pressure to make sure that none of the politicians feel like they can push through with this disgusting budget.
Okay, so let's recap. 5 p.m. on the September the 10th?
That's right. 5 p.m. September 10th at the front of the UQ Union Building on the University of Queensland. I hope to see as many people possible there.
And the UQ Union Building is quite easy to find, I believe.
Yeah, you could easily find it. It's like a centre of the campus. That's where the refectory is, the food court, and in terms of the actual street address, it's a place called Campbell Place. Most people probably won't know that, though, but it's right at the front of the UQ Union complex.
Yes, because at UQ, when I think of UQ, I just get a headache of like, being lost and not finding anything, so...
Yeah. Well, it's in the St. Lucia campus, and, yeah, it's the main refectory.
Yeah, okay.
Main eating space.
So, and it'll be fairly easy to find that, and then I guess you're going somewhere else from there.
Oh, well, yeah, well, the thing is that Chris Pine is opening the Advanced Engineering Building, which is a building that's actually been open for a while now, but, you know, that's, once again, I think it's just indicative that the university administration just wants an excuse to get him on campus so they can, cozy up to the government, basically, because they want, we've seen so clearly just recently, they've been actually lobbying the government to implement this deregulation measure, so... that's another reason why it does really matter. Students should come out to take a stand.
Huzzah, fantastic. Thanks very much for talking to us today, Duncan.
No worries.
Is there a website?
There's a Facebook page.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. It's just Protest Pine at UQ. So, yeah, everyone should hop on there, you know, quick attending and invite all your friends. That'd be great.
Yep, fantastic. Thanks very much.
No worries. See ya.
And now we're going to hear a song. From a local... Kimbo, what's the song we're going to hear?
I'm not sure, just play it.
Okay. A guy called Richard complained that there was too much hip-hop being played on Mondays. So, Richard, this is for you. We're not playing hip-hop today.
Thank you. makes the rules. Inferiority complex, suspicion of defense, ironic ship of fools. Ironic ship of fools. A countless variations of ball games, ball style connection. That sport can sun lies in competition. So if you depart, part for good, I'll make you leave a short excursion. Exile of this perspective wisdom.
You just heard there from Black is the Colour, and that song was called Uber Australia, no, Terra Australis Uberalis. Kimbo, tell us about that.
Oh, that's the singer from One Inch Punch. No.
Who's One Inch Punch?
They're a punk band from Sydney.
Woohoo! Kimbo had a little story about the importance of protesting.
Oh, yeah, my friend Mia, she was at the Mining and Sustainability Conference, and the mining companies were all talking about protesting being a huge economic impact on their profit margins.
You could see, like, in James Prince Point in Western Australia, that held it up for a long time, and down in New South Wales as well, the protesting has held things, yeah, held things up.
The coal seam gas thing.
Yes. Yeah. And I guess that's why they're, like, activists, environmental activists are being investigated as terrorists.
Yes, and pilloried in the mainstream media quite often, yes.
Because it's such a threat to business, and business is everything. And, I mean, that's what's happening with the education as well. It's a business. It's not about, it's all about capitalism and making more money.
Did you know you played a Run Pig Run song,
yeah,
before when the Black is the Colour?
Yes, and that was called Fixed. What was that about?
It's about being paid. How you have to sign all these forms before you get paid.
Yeah, right. Okay. And we're going to play now the talk by Guy McPherson. This is part four of the talking about climate change and human extinction, which won't be very good for the economy.
Contrary to the contrarian myth that the Earth temperature has stabilized since 1998 was a big El Nino year, and during El Nino years the heat comes out of the ocean, and so we measure it in our land surface records. And what do you know, we've been keeping thermometers on land all this time, because that's where we live. If we were dolphins, I'm sure we'd have thermometers underwater with us, but we don't. So the long records we have are for land surfaces. So it appears that since 1998, the temperature has stabilized at the global level. It appears that way. 1998 remains high for the highest temperature year in planetary history. All 13 of the other 14 warmest records have come in this millennium. So 13 of the 14 come in this millennium, the other one was 1998. Where's the heat been going? We know it's been heating up, it's been going into the ocean. Look at 1998. Right there next to 2000, just the left side of 2000. See what happens to the temperature in the ocean? It skyrockets, especially in the shallow ocean. The light blue figure on top. The ocean has a lot of heat. It's like a battery. It's been soaking up all that heat this time. It looks like we're on track for an El Nino event later this year, as early as this fall. And when that happens, a whole bunch of that heat is gonna come out of the ocean, and we're gonna set a record within the next couple of years for land surface temperature records as well. I promise it's gonna blow away 1998, because there's a lot more heat in the ocean now than there was in 1998. There are 30 self-reinforcing feedback loops that are irreversible at temporal spans relevant to the human experience. Ultimately, they are reversed, or Earth would have gone Venus a long time ago. But they have been reversed in the past over many, many hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of years. And those temporal spans aren't relevant to persistence of humans on the planet. So, methane hydrates or clathrates were bubbling out of the Arctic Ocean as reported in Science about 4 years ago. Hydrates or clathrates are small cages around methane molecule, CH4. And as the clathrate warms, as the cage warms, it breaks off. The bonds break off and the methane is released directly into the water and then directly into the atmosphere. So I'm going to talk about the first of these for quite a while, because we know the most about it. It's been studied, it's a great fear. James Hansen wrote about it in his book, Storms of My Grandchildren. Firing the clathrate gun is about the worst possible thing we could do to ourselves. And so it was reported in Science in March 2010. The methane in the Arctic Ocean alone is equivalent to 1,000 to 10,000 gigatons of carbon relative to the 226 gigatons we burned in fossil fuels as of March 2010. Since then, of course, we've burned a bunch more, so we're up over 300 gigatons of fossil fuel carbon burn. But still, we're talking about 3 to 30 times the amount of carbon equivalent being kicked up into the atmosphere as a result of methane. As reported about a year, a couple of months after that original paper in Science, a minor increase in temperature is sufficient to trigger methane release. And it appears that we've done so. From paper a couple years later, a suite of amplifying feedback mechanisms such as massive methane leaks from the subsea Arctic Ocean have engaged. Finally, years later, there's recognition in the scientific community that self-reinforcing feedback loops have been triggered. To explain a self-reinforcing feedback loop, when you kick a soccer ball on a soccer field, it rolls to a stop relatively quickly because the friction from the grass and gravity causes it to slow and then stop. A self-reinforcing feedback loop is a loop that feeds on itself. So that's kicking the soccer ball over a hill, over a cliff. And initially, at least, the further it goes faster, the more rapidly it descends. According to the authors of a paper that appeared in Nature in July 2013, a 50 gigaton burp of methane is highly possible at any time. At any time, that's equivalent to more than 1,000 gigatons of carbon. It can be released literally at any time. NASA observed methane plumes up to 150 kilometers across that same month in the Arctic Ocean. So imagine you're in a ship in the Arctic Ocean, and as far as you can see in every direction, it looks like ginger ale. The ocean is bubbling. And don't breathe. because that methane is bad for you. According to an analysis by Sam Corana, again not in the Referee Journal literature, the global average temperature of more than 4C above baseline is expected by 2030 and more than 10C by 2040. Also from Malcolm Light, not in the Referee Journal literature, from just a few months ago, the Gulfstream transport rate started the methane hydrate gun firing in the Arctic in 2007, when the energy per year exceeded 10 million times the amount of energy per year necessary to dissociate subsea Arctic methane hydrates. So it appears, based on extensive evidence from the Referee Journal literature and not, that we have fired the clathrate gun. And this is what Karana's analysis looks like with the number two line, the pink line on the left, representing runaway warming. Albert Bartlett, longtime professor and then professor emeritus at Colorado University, pointed out in the thousands of times he gave a presentation on the exponential function that the greatest shortcoming of the human race is our inability to understand the exponential function. Because we see linearly. We look back at what has happened in our lives, and we've seen relatively innocuous change in almost everything. And we project that forward. Look, technology keeps getting better. Temperatures change a little bit. When I speak on college campuses, frequently nobody in the room except me has experienced a normal Earth, because they were all born after February 1985, as were some of the people in the room here. You've only experienced a warmed Earth, because we haven't had a global average month, global average temperature below average since February 1985. You've experienced a warmed planet, and you think it's normal, because that's where normalcy bias takes us. This is what we experience, this is what we'll always experience. We don't deal well with the exponential function, even though we see it everywhere. Carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, that curve looks just like this. Human population growth, that curve looks just like this. The amount of pollution in the ocean looks just like this. But we can't really grok that on sort of a day-to-day basis. We don't go into the grocery store from one week to the next and see an exponential change, right? We go in one time and the bread aisle is one aisle. We don't go in the next time and bread is in the whole store. Well, it's a bread store now? What happened to the strawberry jam? So we don't account for that in our linear driven lives. So what methane concentration globally looked like as of about a month and a half ago, dark red means more methane. You can see the methane in the Northern Hemisphere almost completely, even though there's methane being released from Antarctica now too. And you see it over land as well as over the sea. And I'll talk shortly about that self-reinforcing feedback loop. That's permafrost. As the permafrost breaks down, it releases methane into the atmosphere. And so you can see it's getting really hot, or there's getting to be a lot of methane and therefore potential for a lot of heating in the boreal forest. North America and Europe and Asia. So that was the one self-reinforcing feedback loop produced by the Referee Journal literature in 2010. Four more in 2011. The first of those is Atlantic water shooting through the Fram Strait off the north and east coast of Greenland, taking warm Atlantic water straight up into the Arctic. This is an excellent demonstration of how the self-reinforcing feedback loops don't just feed within themselves, they feed among themselves too. So as more methane is released in the Arctic Ocean, it gets warmer, which causes more methane clathrates to rise to the surface, which causes more methane to be released, which makes it warmer. And so you see that downward spiral. Tack on to that, warm Atlantic water shooting up into the Arctic. So now we have the Arctic 20 degrees warmer than it was in just 2-3 years ago, because we have that warm water going up there. And so now these feedbacks are influencing each other. They're feeding off each other. We have warmer water going up there, releasing methane clathrates. Methane clathrates rise, release methane into the atmosphere. That causes the Atlantic water to be warmer, and so on.
You've been listening to Autonomous Action Radio on Z Digital. For more information about the show, you can go to autonomousactionradio.com or 4ZZZFM.org.au.
Suffer for the oligopoly of the few.